Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that share Mazda's passion that cars make driving matter. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The presidential election of 1960 was historic on several counts.
Senator John Fitzgerald Kennedy, 43 years old, of the state of Massachusetts, will be the next occupant of the White House.
Not only was it one of the closest elections in American history.
Precedent will be broken, the youngest president in 50 years, the second youngest in our history, the first president born in the 20th century, the first president to serve in the United States Navy, the first president of the Roman Catholic faith.
It was a big shift from the 1928 landslide defeat of the first Roman Catholic nominee of a major party, Al Smith, who encountered anti-Catholic sentiment on the campaign trail. Among the smears against him, if he is elected president, you will not be allowed to have or read a Bible. Protestant marriages would be annulled. A tunnel would be built connecting Washington with the Vatican. A similar charge was lobbed at John F. Kennedy by Protestant clergy who said the Pope would exert pressure on Kennedy's decision-making in the Oval Office. Kennedy addressed his doubters.
I believe in an America where the separation of church and state is absolute, where no Catholic prelate would tell the president, should he be Catholic, how to act, and no Protestant minister would tell his parishioners for whom to vote.
That might have helped neutralize what was called the religious question for Kennedy, but presidential politics and religion still intersect with each other today, especially in the 2020 election. In that 1960 speech, Kennedy said having to talk about his religion was a distraction from the issues. Today, another Catholic nominee, Joe Biden, relishes discussing his faith.
Faith sees best in the dark. I find the one thing it gives me. And I'm not trying to proselytize. I'm not trying to convince you to share my religious views. But for me, it's important because it gives me some reason to have hope and purpose.
Religion occupied a lot of space at the Democratic and Republican conventions. While Democrats used it to build up their nominee, Republicans treated it as a wedge issue, claiming religion was under attack. A few weeks ago, Trump falsely painted the Biden agenda this way.
No religion, no anything. Hurt the Bible, hurt God. He's against God.
On this Politics Monday, we're taking a closer look at religion and the election. Jack Jenkins is a national reporter for the Religion News Service. He's been covering the presidential race and is the author of American Prophets, The Religious Roots of Progressive Politics and the Ongoing Fight for the Soul of the Country. Thank you for joining us. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Gerardo Marti is professor of sociology at Davidson College and author of American Blind Spot, Race, Class, Religion, and the Trump Presidency. Welcome back to the program.
My pleasure. Thanks.
And Lerone A. Martin is an associate professor of religion and politics at the John C. Danforth Center on Religion and Politics at Washington University in St. Louis. He has a forthcoming book about to appear on your shelf, America's Bishop, J. Edgar Hoover, and the Making of the Religious Right, title subject to change by the publisher. Thank you for joining us, too, this morning. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Let me start with the conventions. Jack, you referred to the Democratic Convention as being atypically religious. Was it planned that way because the nominee, Joe Biden, has a deep religious faith in Catholicism, and he describes this race as a battle for the soul of the nation? Or was it that way because Democrats know that they have to pry away some evangelicals from the Trump camp?
So honestly, I feel it's a little bit of both. As you know, I mean, one thing about Joe Biden is that unlike some other Democratic politicians, he has been consistent about talking about his faith throughout the course of his political career. It's something he has often invoked historically, even from his first years as a senator. It's something he's comfortable discussing. It's something he's enthusiastic about discussing, and something that has influenced him during major moments and his political career, both as a senator and then later as vice president of the United States. And so, that helps when you have a candidate who's very comfortable talking about faith. when you want to, you know, sort of put that on display as something that's a big part of their political persona. But as you note, another big part of this, another thing that came across really clearly in the Democratic National Convention was that there did seem to be this play to more moderate Democrats or even some more moderate conservatives who are religious. You know, people have to remember that this year's Democratic National Convention, you know, the campaigns don't get to go hold a whole lot of rallies between now and November if the pandemic persists. And so that means this was one of the biggest moments that either party had to make their case to the general public. And so whereas previous Democratic National Conventions might have played more strongly to the base, and both parties did that to some degree, there did seem to be this sort of general election pitch that was made. And at the Democratic Convention, that seemed to be deeply influenced by faith. You had multiple speakers throughout the course of the week that include Michelle Obama, of course, Dr. Biden, Joe Biden's wife, and Senator Chris Coons, all discussing Joe Biden's faith at length. They dedicated a video to it. They dedicated speeches to it. It was very clear that they, as you noted at the top of the segment, wanted to paint him as someone who is deeply devout, or at least deeply connected to his faith in a way that could peel off a few conservative white evangelicals, or perhaps more pressingly, some white Catholics like himself, like Joe Biden, in the Rust Belt, who are a coveted voting bloc, you know, when it comes down to the general election.
I'm old enough to remember politicians never discussing religion, ever, and it never coming up, except maybe in the Pledge of Allegiance at these political conventions. Now, suddenly, every word is about religion, and they're casting aspersions on each other. At the Republican convention, somebody, I don't know who it was now, but somebody said that Joe Biden, who has lived his entire life, as you just said, Jack, as a practicing Catholic and wears it on his sleeve, that he was a Catholic in name only, and Donald Trump Jr. proclaimed the liberal attitude toward religion to be you're not allowed to go to church, but mass chaos in the streets gets a pass. Dr. Martin, why is religion playing a role in politics in 2020? Why is this even discussed at presidential conventions?
Well, religion has always had a place in relation to Republican politics, because we've seen that conservative white Christians have continually supported the Republican ticket. And that's something that's been developed over 50 years now. And when we saw Donald Trump, who presumably didn't seem to have a religious commitment at all and seems to act in a way that isn't consistent with having Christian commitments, I think everyone was pretty shocked at the amount of support that was given to him by people who had supposedly raised up issues of character or sexual purity or other aspects of what it meant to be the right kind of politician. And so we have been scratching our heads now for many years saying, why is it that we have this enthusiastic support, especially by white evangelical Christians, but they're not alone, that they have this enthusiasm for Trump, and that some have even put a religious sanction on him as a person who is anointed by God, has a special calling, and is fulfilling a very particular mission, whether he's aware of it or not, and that God is doing something special. So the presidency has become more than the person of Trump. It has become something about their desires for the America that they perceive to have been lost, in America that they think should be regained. So it's essentially a religious vision that they're trying to bring about now through the instrument of the state, a combination of courts, executive order, and as much as possible politicians who side with them in their sentiments.
So Lerone Martin, that kind of plays into the question I was going to ask you next, which is, we have a practicing Catholic who wears his religion on his sleeve, makes no bones about it. Donald Trump, a man who rarely graces the doorway of a church, who paid off porn stars, and yet he's been embraced by the religious right. How can he credibly insert religion into this campaign?
Well, I think that what we've seen, what sociologists and pollsters and others have been able to show us, is that we're living in a moment where often political views are shaping religious views as opposed to the other way around. And I think that white evangelicals have gravitated towards Trump not because of his necessary religious commitments of worshiping, going to church, or even knowing the books of the Bible, but they've gravitated towards him because he shares their political viewpoints. And I think that they have made religious ideals and political viewpoints to be synonymous. And so if Trump has the political viewpoints that they want, they see him as also having the religious viewpoints that they want. And I think that white evangelicals and even some scholars of white evangelicalism have tried to talk about white evangelicalism as a movement with theological distinctions. But I think what we're actually seeing is that it's never just about theology when it comes to white evangelicals. It's much more about political viewpoints. And as long as Trump says that he doesn't agree with a woman's right to choose, he's against same-sex marriage, he thinks that America needs to go back in order to recover something that we've lost. I think as long as he continues with that, even if he continues to pay people off, or even if he continues to mispronounce books of the Bible or doesn't even attend church, as long as he stands with these political viewpoints, I think white evangelicals will continue to support him.
So there's this concept of selling your soul to the devil. Is that what's going on here? I'm not sure who to ask that of.
Well, no, I think that part of the surprise is that Donald Trump has been surprisingly orthodox in the views that white evangelicals have kept. And so white evangelicals have had a long road in embracing different aspects of things that are not just purely theological. They include things like a libertarian inflected capitalism, a Christian, if you will, friendly capitalism. And that libertarian alliance with conservative Christians is something that has also been developed since the early part of the 20th century. And surprisingly, Donald Trump very much aligns with those kinds of things and fits that. The other thing is that we have been saying white evangelical, and I think that whiteness and the quality of whiteness has to be investigated much better. For many, many years, we've seen whiteness as something that's an invisible quality, and some people still have a hard time believing that such a thing exists. But whiteness is associated with a lot of things, particularly something that the political scientists called racial resentment. This is all very difficult to hear because no one wants to say that they're racist, and that's not exactly what I'm saying. What I am saying is that careful work has consistently shown that the whiteness that has been associated with conservative religion has also been freighted with racialized sentiments, and ones that have over and over again served to support policies that exclude rather than embrace issues that would help the areas of our country, the people in our country who have been left out of the system, particularly systems of wealth and opportunity.
So, Jack, if it's true that the President Trump is playing to white sympathizers and also appeals to white evangelicals, and we have Joe Biden, who is a religious man, who proclaims it, but also appeals to the more liberal side of politics, which message will resonate? Or does one cancel out the other? In other words, just because Joe Biden is more religious, but he's liberal, will that make him unappealing to people who are religious?
I think there's a couple different things going on there.
Because you got about 30 seconds. 30 seconds.
Okay. In 30 seconds, basically on Trump's end, you do have this sort of Christian nationalist argument where, you know, religion is more of an identity attached to the American flag, attached often to whiteness, as opposed to a listing of theological principles. And then on the other side, you have Biden, who at least at the Democratic National Convention was kind of appealing, instead of to the, you know, the demons, the better angels. And I think the big X factor here is the pandemic and Trump's response to the ongoing pandemic.
Let me stop you there. I'll let you finish on the other side. It's Charlotte Talks. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Fifth Third Bank, dedicated to the financial empowerment of the community by investing time, resources, and people in the Charlotte area and throughout the state. More at 53.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. It's Politics Monday. We're talking about the intersection of politics and religion in the 2020 presidential race. Dr. Gerardo Marti is with us. He's a professor of sociology at Davidson College. Dr. Lerone Martin is with us from the John C. Danforth Center for Religion and Politics at Washington University in St. Louis. And Jack Jenkins, national reporter for the Religion News Service. And Jack, I had to cut you off, so I'm going to give you another shot at answering that question about the trade-off and whether one cancels out the other. We have a relatively a-religious guy in Donald Trump who is supported by the religious right, a religious guy in Joe Biden who is not because of his liberal politics. Do the two cancel each other out?
Right. And just to finish the thought earlier, kind of talking about, you know, Joe Biden kind of appealing to, you know, piety and religion, how it looks in people's individual lives, and then Trump kind of appealing to Christian nationalism. I mean, obviously, one of the more poignant moments that exemplified that was when the clearing of Lafayette Square, you know, right outside the White House, when, you know, Trump ended up, you know, there were these demonstrators, peaceful demonstrators, largely outside of the White House, who were forcibly cleared, as well as priests who were at St. John's, who were also forcibly cleared by police right before Trump walked across that green and then held up a Bible in front of that church. Now, that was an overt signal to his conservative Christian base and to those who kind of see that idea of Christian nationalism as attractive. But it also sparked huge outcry, including among members of the religious community. And I think what's been what was really telling is that when we by the time we got months later to these conventions, you had a Republican Party that was very much leaning into the idea that faith is under attack, which is the same message Trump was trying to send in front of that church, which had been burned the night before. He was trying to, you know, position himself as this defender of faith. And that theme came up over and over again over the course of the convention. But Biden and the Biden camp really kind of leaned into faith as this sort of consoling thing, this idea of faith in the midst of mourning, which is, has particular resonance in the midst of a pandemic when we're losing 1,000 odd people a day to this ongoing coronavirus pandemic. And so I think what the bureaucrats are really banking on is that we do have polls showing that if, even among white evangelicals, if somebody knows someone who has contracted the coronavirus, they are less supportive of Donald Trump than white evangelicals who don't know anybody who has contracted the coronavirus. And so what I think is that, you know, the traditional kind of ways of talking about faith have changed a little bit given the context. And it's really unclear whether Trump's appeals to Christian nationalism, which worked out for him back in 2016, are going to be enough to overcome the daily, you know, encounter with mourning and tragedy that we're having in the pandemic that Joe Biden's version of faith seems to appeal to.
So all during the Republican convention, Lerone Martin, we heard from various Republicans trying to paint a picture of a religiously bankrupt America should Joe Biden win this election. As Donald Trump once said, no religion, no anything, hurt the Bible, hurt God, he's against God. That's a quote. Are these credible statements to either side?
Well, I certainly think that they're not credible to those who are on the left or part of what we would call the religious left or the progressive left. Those who see religion in the same way that people like Martin King and Fannie Lou Hamer and others saw religion, that religion is actually about shaping the public, bringing about social justice. I think they are credible for folks on the right, especially for white evangelicals, because of what Jack mentioned earlier, ideas of Christian nationalism, which really sees America as a Christian nation. Now, this is not the idea. Most Christian nationalists do not want to make Christianity the official religion of America, although some do. But the main idea is that America is a Christian nation and that evangelical Christianity should be at the center of American politics and American civic life. And so when Trump says that there will be no more religion, what many of his white evangelical audience, what they hear is that there will be somehow a rollback on laissez-faire capitalism. There will be a push towards pointing out systemic racism. There'll be a push to end certain ideas of staunch nationalism. So those quotes that you read are very credible to many of Trump's audience on the right. And I think that this is part of what one of the dangers that I see of white evangelicalism is the way that it is circumscribed the moral purview of white evangelicals. is that they equate religion with certain ideas of American nationalism, certain ideas of American whiteness, especially as it relates to race, and that they always locate race as a problem that resides in individual souls and not the soul of the nation. And I think that's one of the problems about white evangelicalism, the way that it is circumscribed their ideas of morality.
I think, Dr. Marti, you're the one that brought up this intersection of religion and money. Jesus threw the money changers out of the temple. So how did money get caught up in American religion in the 20th century? And how has the fact that you have a guy in the White House who is a moneyed guy and who believes, allegedly, in free market capitalism, although some of his actions would indicate otherwise, that they gravitate to him because of the money? What's that got to do with God?
Yeah, there's a long and great history to investigate here. We can go all the way back to D.L. Moody's revivalism. He was a shoe salesman, and he was able to use the apparatus of sales and even invented a stock certificate as a sort of guarantee of salvation, using the parallels between business and capitalism and the image of faith for a modern world. When you keep going forward from there, you have people like Robert Schuller in particular, who I've written about, who really sought to make sure that you could be a good Christian and a good capitalist. And that built on a whole host of developments to simply say that when we pursue money and capital, and these conservative Christian businessmen are doing this, they want to be assured that they also are faithful Christians. And in doing so, they partnered with clergy in order to invent a new theological system, a theological system that would put off what had been called the social gospel movement, a concern for workers, people who were impoverished, immigrants who were struggling, and instead be able to say that the American way, the way that is to be contrasted with communism, a godless communism, is a faith-filled capitalist free enterprise system. And so freedom and capitalism and religion all became super collided, which really was brought out in the Reagan presidency. And so Reagan's economics, along with his fierce identification with white evangelicals as an insider, came together in order to promote a furthering of an economic system built on credit, expansion of debt, changing of the financial structures that we had, a real focus on asset-based wealth, a shift from the individual and the worker to the corporation and the stock market. And so now this is what we see. We all even still equate the economy with the stock market, which is really a very thin and narrow view, because it doesn't really account for so much that actually occurs in the economy and the way in which real people, most people, are hurting and don't have even enough just to cover a health emergency if it were to happen. So that's this sort of swirl of things that have been associated with a package that is a modern white Christian libertarianism. That is really what lies at the root of much of what we see as a white Christian evangelical commitment to the Republican Party. It's a Christian libertarianism.
So let's flip the coin, Dr. Martin. If we've been talking about white evangelicals who support Donald Trump and Republicanism, it appears, I could be wrong, that Joe Biden and Democrats have large support in the black church. Is that support coming from the pews or the pulpit?
Well, those are...
Let me get Dr. Martin's response on that.
Please,
Dr.
I would say that it's coming from both sides. I think despite some of Joe Biden's fumbles as of late, some of the things that he has said about the African-American community lacking diversity, and that there was some type of authentic blackness that was attached to voting for him, I think that African-Americans are in support of Joe Biden. And I think that Joe Biden's faith, with his connections to Catholic teachings on social justice, really does align with many African-American churches. African-American churches, particularly the mainstream Protestant ones, Baptist and others, really do align with white evangelicals theologically as they think about the Bible and about Jesus, but they arrive at very different political conclusions. And I think because of that, Joe Biden does enjoy support within African-American churches from the pulpit to the pew.
Jack, large majorities of black Protestants, 83%, Hispanic Catholics, 74%, and religiously unaffiliated voters, also 74%, say they disapprove of Trump, according to a Pew Research survey. Among black Protestants, just 8% say they would vote for Trump if the election were held today. 88% said they would vote for Biden. Are these numbers high enough to supersede the influence of white evangelicals over this election?
I mean, you know, it's one of those things where how do you get the math? How do you cobble together the right equation to pull ahead on election day? And you need the answer that most political strategists will give you is we need all of them, right? Like we need everybody to show up who might make up the base. That includes black Protestants who have been particularly supportive of Joe Biden. They're arguably the reason he became the nominee to begin with. You know, I did some reporting down in South Carolina during that primary where I would walk into Joe Biden campaign offices, and on the walls there would be a sign that says "Preacher's Heart, Joe Biden," right? Like it was an absolutely a key part of their campaign, even during the primary that they took very seriously, was black Protestants in particular showing up to vote. And so you need that on election day. You also would want to help convince some other groups to come over, and among those actually is these more swing groups such as Hispanic Protestants. I mean, that's a smaller group statistically, but a significant group because they tend to switch their votes one way or another. And that's a coveted community. And any election is one that you could potentially persuade. I mean, that is why Donald Trump, back in January, you know, launched his Evangelicals for Trump initiative for his reelection campaign at Hispanic Protestant Church. It is also why the Democratic National Convention opened up with a prayer this past week with Reverend Gabe Salguero, who is a Hispanic evangelical pastor. It's very clear that they're doing their best to make inroads into that community to help make sure that they vote for Democrats come election day. And then there are also targeted communities, such as in Michigan, there's a disproportionately large Muslim American community that you're gonna see the Biden campaign lean into, and maybe even the Trump campaign try to appeal to so that they can try to run up the score in Michigan. Where, you know, Trump's margin of victory back in 2016 was so small. And when you have, if this election looks anything like 2016, the numbers for Trump's victory ended up granting him, particularly Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin, were so small that it doesn't take much shifting to give that victory to a Democrat. So that's why you're going to see Democrats do everything they can to make sure that the base shows up, but also just chip away just 2 or 3% among white evangelicals, white Catholics, Hispanic Protestants, and others to try to pull that across the finish line for Biden. And I'll note that, you know, this project is ongoing and definitely intensifying. Both the Trump campaign and the Biden campaign have announced new religion-related outreach events just in the past week. And so it looks like they're both taking this, kind of fight for the faithful very seriously.
Lerone Martin, the influence of religion over politics or with politics seems to ebb and flow over time in the history of the United States. But you say several critical turns and factors have led the overwhelming majority of white evangelicals to move toward the modern Republican Party. And one factor is, you say, in this shift, was the modern civil rights era and the black freedom struggle. Explain that.
Well, I think we see in that moment that white evangelical populism, which would have been along the line of early 20th century gentlemen like William Jennings Bryan, who was a conservative Christian individual who really believed in social justice and fighting for individual workers. I think that white evangelical populism began to shift from against corporations to against government as a result of some of the government mandates that came out of the civil rights movement, the Voting Rights Act, the Civil Rights Act, and also the Fair Housing Act. I think that there are many of folks in the South, which Nixon rode to victory about the Southern strategy, the silent majority, that saw the government mandates about integration as somehow an infringement upon their individual rights, especially as it relates to property and education. That is a key moment in the rise of the evangelical right, pushing back against government and seeing the Democrat Party, especially with LBJ, pushing some of this legislation through. They saw the Democrats as the enemy, and Nixon was able to ride that into victory. And we've seen that conflation continued to increase ever since.
Gerardo Marti, Jack just mentioned outreach, and that both campaigns have launched religious outreach campaigns as a subset of their major campaign, I suppose. And I know that Joe Biden recently hired a faith outreach director who is a former Republican who declared in 2012 that he was now a Democrat because of his evangelical faith. But most evangelicals, as we've been talking about, fall into the Republican camp. So is he odd man out, or do most of us tend to view this group as a monolith when in fact they are not?
This is becoming a more difficult question because the people who check boxes are increasingly not checking any box at all, even if they have a religious sentiment. So now we have people who had been evangelical who no longer abide by much of what white evangelicalism represents today. And so they may say that they're evangelical, or they may say they were evangelical, but those sentiments, as profound as they've been, especially if you grew up with it and have had really shaping experiences from it as a young person, and then that's hard to leave behind. But I think when it comes to politics, it's not just your affiliation. It has to do with what people hear and whether the signals that are being given out sound like the kind of Christian commitment that you're used to. And so it's less about whether Joe Biden has faith or the people associated with his campaign have faith. It's whether people recognize that that's the faith that's the true faith, or that's the faith that's the right faith. And that is very hard to do. So the best politicians are able to associate in a way that they connect and say that person understands me. And that is very different from just saying, I'm a person of faith.
That takes us back to 1960 and beyond, because Protestants don't generally trust Catholicism. It's foreign to them, and it's run by this guy in Rome. Is that still a factor? I mean, do people still consider that in 30 seconds or less? Who would like to take that? Go ahead, Leroy Martin.
I would say that was certainly the case with especially white evangelicals. They began to shift, especially as they saw allies in one another in the fight over abortion and Roe v. Wade. But prior to that, you're right, white evangelicals, especially Protestants, did not trust Catholics. But that all began to shift as it relates to the fight over abortion rights.
Okay. And that's a thing about Joe Biden that we can talk about, too, because his political opinions about abortion do not line up with those of his church. We'll talk about that when we come back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to those who believe a car should stir one's emotions and deliver a heightened state of driving. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about religion and politics in the presidential campaign that's ongoing. Jack Jenkins is with us, a national reporter for Religion News Service and the author of American Roots, The Ongoing Fight for the Soul of the Country. Dr. Gerardo Marti is a professor of sociology at Davidson College and author of American Blind Spot, Race, Class, Religion, and the Trump Presidency. And Dr. Lerone Martin is with us, Associate Professor of Religion and Politics at the John C. Danforth Center for Religion and Politics at Washington University in St. Louis, and the author of the forthcoming book, America's Bishop, J. Edgar Hoover and the Making of the Religious Right. So, Jack, let's talk about that. Joe Biden has said, if I'm not mistaken, that although he's a devout Roman Catholic and the Catholic Church is anti-abortion, and the Catholic Church has not taken a very strong stand on gay rights, let's put it charitably here, he would not insert the opinions of his church into politics. Is that what religious people are looking for?
Right. I mean, this for Biden goes back to Kennedy. He has actually been quoted saying that speech that you played at the top of the segment where, you know, Kennedy discusses faith and that he would not be dictated by Rome, is something that Biden has taken to heart and is the disposition that he holds when he, you know, addresses things like abortion as a lawmaker. He kind of, you know, went back in the 80s when he was voting on issues of abortion rights, actually said that it was very agonizing for him because he felt like he didn't want to conscript others into, you know, believing the same things that his faith believes. And, you know, he's even shifted more towards abortion rights over the course of his political career and even the course of this campaign in ways that more people who take religious people, whether they be Catholic or Protestant or otherwise, who really oppose abortion in all or most cases, find abhorrent. I mean, one of the instances that happened early on in the primary was that Joe Biden was actually reportedly denied communion by a priest in South Carolina, particularly around his abortion stance, something that was threatened for John Kerry when he ran for president in 2004, also a Catholic politician, but never actually occurred, has actually already happened for Biden. And abortion in particular is a difficult issue for a lot of people because there hasn't been as much movement on that issue as, say, LGBTQ rights or same-sex marriage. That having been said, what's interesting about that issue, whereas it definitely can be a thing that Democrats and conservatives will vote on specifically, there are many Democrats who oppose abortion but remain Democrats. It's not the only issue they vote on. Also, American Catholics, when polled, actually end up agreeing with the Joe Biden form of Catholicism more than they would a more conservative form of Catholicism. Most American Catholics actually support abortion in some cases, and actually the vast majority support same-sex marriage. And so in many ways, while he may stand on the opposite side of the table from the Vatican, he stands right where a lot of American Catholics do. And in addition to that, I mean, many liberal Catholics have argued for some time that, conservative Catholic politicians have been hesitant to support the church's teachings on, say, climate change, action on climate change. Pope Francis has now delivered an encyclical on that, or doing more to help immigrants or refugees. And apparently, this is one of the more telling moments of this campaign for me, was when a conservative Catholic outlet, EWTN, did an interview with Donald Trump and asked point blank. They said there's been this conversation among evangelical and Catholic communities that Joe Biden is actually more the quote unquote pro-life candidate because he wants to take action on climate change to help immigrants and opposes the death penalty. And then posing it to Donald Trump saying, what do you say about that, Mr. President? And, Trump basically just, ignored part of the premise of the question and just insisted that he's pro-life because he opposes abortion. And then also insisted that he does absolutely support the death penalty. So the Catholic politics in the United States has always been complicated. The Catholic vote, as it were, that benefited Kennedy doesn't exist in the same way. It's much more split. There's multiple forms of Catholicism, politically speaking, in the United States. But the question really is, how many voters really would just vote on the issue of abortion? And there are definitely millions, but whether there's enough for Trump to just win on that issue is questionable at this point in American history.
Let me share some comments that have come in from listeners while we've been talking. Roger emails, the intertwining of politics and church has resulted in a modification of gospel principles and the understanding of the words and actions of Jesus. The current acceptance by the church of the ethics and morals of our president is distressing. Apparently, the church has traded its soul for 30 pieces of silver, things like conservative judges, anti-abortion, which is not the same thing, he writes, as pro-life, and expulsion of people, quote, not like us. Dr. Marty, you're nodding in agreement, so tell me what you think about that comment.
Well, what I find interesting is that for many, many years, white evangelicals, conservative Christians felt like revival was the answer. We needed to change people's hearts and society would change. But eventually they gave that up. And I think that today, white evangelicals and other conservative Christians have decided that revival is not going to happen. And so now what we need to do is to use the apparatus of the state in order to enforce the kinds of things that they think should be a characteristic of a Christian America. So because of a belief that America is a Christian nation, they believe that it's legitimate to go ahead and use the authority and the force of the state in order to impose their views, including the ways in which laws are enacted and judges make decisions. That, to me, is a very important shift.
Laura emails, your guest links whiteness, I'm not sure which one of you she's referring to, but links whiteness with conservative churches, but aren't many traditional black churches socially conservative as well? And how does that fit into the whiteness hypothesis?
I'll take a stab at this. This is Lerone Martin. Well, I would say that there are a number of ways, as I said earlier, that African-American Protestant churches align theologically with some of their white evangelical brothers and sisters. But the white evangelicals from the very beginning of the formation of the modern evangelical movement with the founding of the National Association of Evangelicals in 1942, did not invite these other groups who shared the same theology to join with them. There were African-American Christians who theologically agreed with them, some of Asian-American Christians who agreed with them, and so forth and so on. They were not invited to join the National Association of Evangelicals from the very beginning. So as I said earlier, while they may share theological commitments, their political commitments vary. For example, African-American Christians, when polled, will overwhelmingly say that racism in this country is systemic, and it is part of the country and the making of the country. Whereas white evangelicals, when polled, will say that racism exists solely, primarily in individual hearts and souls. So that is just one example where they may have theological commitments, but politically speaking, vary significantly.
Jack, go ahead. You wanted to say something about that?
Just to add to that, one of the things I think has been interesting in the last 20 years is that there's been this rhetoric that has been developed among the religious right in general, and sometimes just in rank and file Republicans, that the Democratic Party is quote unquote godless. And many have argued for quite some time that erases not only the number of, the diverse array of faith groups that are represented in the Democratic Party, Hindus, Muslims, mainline Protestants, et cetera, but also particularly, Black Protestants who have never stopped talking about faith and politics in the same breath, over the course of American history. And I will also note that one of the things that came out in the Republican convention was this line that we, quote unquote, stand for our flag and kneel for our God. And that kind of erases the fact that many of the people who have actually knelt during the national anthem did so both in protest against racism and police brutality and citing their faith as the reason for doing that. And that often gets erased in this kind of conversation. Never mind that many people who participated in the George Floyd demonstrations over the last few months were also very vocally people of faith. And so I just point that out, that there is some cognitive dissonance happening in that conversation that seems to just think that faith in general is something that can only end up being conservative in general and the Republican Party in particular.
Dr. Martin.
And I would just add to the guest question, I believe it was Laura. I want to be clear that I think all three of us would say, all four of us would say, when we say whiteness, we're not referring to white people specifically, but whiteness as an ideal and as an organizing principle that should be on top or superior to other groups. I think I want to make that clear that we're not speaking about white individuals, but whiteness as an idea and organizing principle of power.
On the Democratic ticket, you have a devout Roman Catholic running as the president, and as vice president, Kamala Harris, I'm told, is a Baptist with parents who are Hindu and Jewish. So do most Americans see this ticket as one that will hold true to the principles of freedom of religion in America, or do they see it as a threat to the supremacy of Christianity in America? Jack, you're the reporter here. Let me get your thoughts on that.
I think one of the interesting things about Kamala Harris being on the ticket is that sort of diverse religious background, having Hindu family, married to a Jewish man, also attending a Baptist church. There's just a lot going on in her religious life that really isn't that necessarily uncommon among the lived experience of millions of Americans. But it really kind of comes down to what you mean by, again, religious liberty and religious freedom, right? And I think if you're coming from a position where that term specifically means, freedom for conservative religious individuals to be able to practice their faith freely, which both of my colleagues on this call have also mentioned earlier, tends to be something that the religious right claims pretty fervently. When they talk about religious freedom, they are often talking about, their right to be able to express their faith freely. Then I think that they would see Joe Biden and Kamala Harris as a threat to that. They would see, they would point to their political history and say, hey, these are people who haven't always been friendly to the kind of faith we espouse. But on the other side of that, there are many millions of people who saw, Trump's travel ban, banning people from entry from mostly Muslim majority countries as an explicit infringement on religious liberty as well. But it was for Muslim Americans, not necessarily for white evangelicals or white Catholics. And so I think the term religious freedom and religious liberty has become politicized in a big way that makes it, kind of a Rorschach test to see what it means to you, politically speaking. So I don't expect the rank and file white evangelical to see Joe Biden and Kamala Harris as a champion for their cause and for maybe their version of religious freedom. But I expect millions of other Americans to see the reverse, to say this is a group of people who might finally represent the vision of religious liberty that I've been fighting for, you know, quote unquote, for years and haven't seen represented in American politics in the same way.
The recently disgraced Jerry Falwell Jr. Said conservative Christians need to stop electing nice guys. He said they might make great Christian leaders, but the U.S. needs street fighters like Donald Trump at every level of government. And Dr. Marti, you say that the goal of today's evangelical conservatives is no longer to morally persuade the public of their religious convictions. Rather, their goals have become to Their goal has become to authoritatively enforce behavioral guidelines, through elected and non-elected officials who will shape policies and interpret laws such that they cannot be so easily altered or dismissed through the vagaries of popular elections. Wow. It is said that people cling to religion because it's a refuge from chaos. And that is also the same reason that a lot of people are in America right now seem to be tending toward authoritarianism. And that is something that Donald Trump apparently is embracing. Is this secular and religious pull toward authoritarianism a perfect storm?
This is the conversation we're having right now. There are many who fear that this is exactly what's going on, and yet others believe a strong enforcement of the things that they see as right is what America has needed for a very long time. There are many Americans who simply do not trust the democratic process because there are many voices that they feel are not legitimate because they believe that they do not have America's best interests in mind. And ultimately, it is a failure of pluralism, the ability to embrace a diversity of perspectives, ways of life, a way of being able to embrace a different aspect of what freedom means, and one that would look to those who have been ignored, overlooked, or left out. And that is very difficult, especially when you see a majority and one that has already enjoyed plenty of privileges and the assumptions of rightness in America, now feeling that they are victimized, that they are the ones who are being marginalized, that they are the ones being left out. And so we have a clash of people who feel that they are victimized versus those who demonstrably, through evidence, can be shown as being ongoingly marginalized in the American experience. So once you have the apparatus of the state where you can control where money goes, who has permission to do what, the policies and the representation that you hold, those things end up being real in terms of real power. Power for who gets in the door, who has attention, who has the spotlight. And if you decide that this is the only way to do things, and then you have a religious sanctioning behind it, it's very hard not to call that a form of authoritarianism that's in action.
Jack, you wrote an article about Vice President Pence's nomination acceptance speech where he essentially took lines of scripture and substituted the words Old Glory for Jesus and several other things that happened along the way. And some people lauded that speech. Others expressed concern that Pence's fusion of God and country appears to be a nod toward Christian nationalism. And also it asserts that the United States should be a Christian nation. Is that where we're headed?
I think, you know, in terms of the political influence of that school of thought, I think we're already there. I think that that sentiment that Pence expressed in that speech, again, sort of taking a mashup of Bible quotes and putting, you know, Old Glory where the word Jesus normally would be, is not that uncommon. And I think, again, as mentioned earlier, it more often expresses itself as an identity than a theology. It's this thing that people wrap themselves in that you can often drop other political beliefs inside. Sociologists have said that is something that's proven very influential in 2016 and will continue to do so in 2020.
Jack Jenkins with the Religion News Service, Dr. Gerardo Marti with Davidson College, Dr. Leroy Martin as well. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to Mazda's focus to ensure every element of a car is designed around the driver. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.